okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 150 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
I'm well. How about you?
Mate, I'm pretty good. Had a great weekend.
Well, it was lovely to have you down. We'll have to talk about that later in the podcast, but it was great to have you along for our advanced flash photography workshop.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, no, I had a great time. And yes, we will certainly talk about it more later in this podcast. But what we do want to cover, or what we will go to right now, is an interview that I recorded yesterday. It's Tuesday night as we're now recording, and this interview I did yesterday morning with Linda and Leo from Wacom Australia. So we'll throw to this interview, and Shelton and I shall return afterwards. So we're joined by Leo and Linda from Wacom Australia. Now, I've got to say, guys, I'm on a bit of a mission to educate people here. So it is pronounced Wacom, right?
Yes, it comes from the word wa in Japanese, that means harmony. And when the company was established, the whole idea of the company is to provide harmony with computing for the user.
Cool. And so the product line, if I understand it correctly, is broken up in three segments. Is that right? Bamboo, the Intuos, and the Cintiq. Is that it, or is there more to it than that?
There's actually more than that.
Oh, okay.
There's actually a whole segment which is interactive pen displays that are not at the Cintiq level.
Right.
Feel a different need. And there's also a product called SignPad, which we don't sort of talk about a lot, but which is a electronic signature capture device that's being used in security and for all sorts of record keeping.
Okay, so do you want to start at the bottom end and we'll work our way up through it all?
No, that's probably a good place to go.
So Bamboo would be the entry level, would that be correct?
Yes, yes. There's Bamboo Touch only, Bamboo Pen only, and the most commonly used one is Bamboo Pen and Touch.
Right.
That offers the user, you know, the facility of a pen with the ease of using gestures if they wish to, for zoom in, zoom out, rotate, etc. And then there's Bamboo Fun, which is a larger size tablet but the same level of functionality. And in Australia, and only in Australia, there's one called Bamboo Craft, which is the same as Bamboo Fun, only we've added to it some instructions on how to do scrapbooking, which tends to be an area that's becoming more and more tablet prolific.
Because that's a really, you know, that's a real growth hobby area, the whole scrapbooking thing, isn't it?
It's huge. I'm really surprised at how big it's become and how universal it is. We actually started playing around with it here in Australia at Wacom before the US did, but it's taken off in a huge way in the US, and they have a whole section of their site devoted to scrapping.
Awesome. Okay, and so then moving up from Bamboo, we get to Intuos?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so what's the major, I guess, differences between what you get at the Bamboo level and what you get at the Intuos level?
So the Intuos level, you get the professional level of functionality and features. So things like the ability to customize each and individual buttons for the time purposes within specific programs. So you can program the buttons to work differently in Photoshop, like in, say, Word or your email client, etc. Like the pen having double the sensitive level to be able to detect minute changes and also very, very low weight of activations, to things like having the ability to get different types of pen, which not only detect your pressure level and tilt level of the pen, but also things like rotation, extra wheel to adjust different settings within programs like Photoshop.
So just to clarify, when you talk about rotation, you're talking about rotating the actual work area on screen, not rotating the actual graphics tablet on your desk, right?
Oh, there's different types of rotation we can do. We can rotate the workspace when your programs by customizing that options into your tablet function. Like there's an actual a touch ring, a toggle ring.
Yep.
Built in on the Intuos 4, and you by default, even in say Photoshop, for instance, one of those options is to use the ring to be able to rotate your canvas in Photoshop. And then the rotation I meant was like on the physical pen itself. It's got multi-level detection built in on the pen. So certain pens, like the Art Pen, you can twist the barrel of the pen, and depending on your brush within say Photoshop, you can rotate the brush as well at the same time.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
See now this is the kind of thing that I haven't even got to yet. You know, I've spent maybe 4 or 5 hours with this thing since you handed them out to us a couple of weeks ago. And I absolutely love it, but I do feel like I've barely scratched the surface with this thing. It's just there's so much functionality there that I really need to sit down and read the PDF from end to end.
Well, don't do that.
Don't do that? I'll get there, but I've got to say, I've never used a tablet prior to this, and it's just such a much more natural way of working than trying to do brush strokes with a mouse. It's just a completely different playing field.
No question about it. Just before we sort of leave that rotation section, though,
yep.
The one other thing about Intuos 4, which I think makes it stand out, is the fact that it's ambidextrous. You can literally reorientate the tablet from being a left-handed user to a right-handed user.
Which is great, because I am left-handed, so.
Well, there you go. We had heard this comment made many times on the previous model, that it wasn't as user-friendly to a left-hander as it was to a right-handed person. So this tablet tends to reflect really carefully the feedback we were getting from users. They've taken it on board, and the adjustments and the changes that they've made are directly linked to comments back from users.
Well, that's a great thing. It's nice when you find a company that can respond at that level to their users' needs. That's great. And so then if we move on from the Intuos level, we get to the Cintiq range? Or there's that, I guess there's that intermediate range, isn't there, of what you were calling interactive pen displays?
Yes, the interactive pen displays are basically a monitor with a bamboo level tablet sitting inside the monitor. It's being used extensively for a presentation solution.
Oh, okay.
So the monitor can sit at the beginning, at the front of a lecture theatre or a tutorial room, and the lecturer has the most easy, intuitive way of presenting their lesson, with the ability of annotating over the top with a pen.
Right, so they're basically drawing on their screen in front of them.
Yes, so there's no learning curve.
Yeah, nice.
So a lot of the... We give 3 different sizes in those. So they're used depending upon the purpose. The size will dictate what's the most suitable. So there's a 15-inch, a 17-inch, and a 21-inch.
Right.
And the new 15 and the new 21 are true widescreen orientation. So.
Oh, okay, nice.
Huge, huge bonus if you're working with the new data projectors, which are tending now to want to work with widescreen.
Right. So would I be correct in assuming then that the difference between these interactive pen displays and what you call the Cintiq range is that the interactive pen displays are like a bamboo type, you know,
yes,
infrastructure, correct. But the Cintiqs are more like the Intuos, except they're, you know, you're drawing on the screen.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
yes.
That's exactly how it is. And we just launched a new Cintiq the 1st of March, and it's actually identical in terms of functionality to the new Intuos 4, with the shortcut keys, the express keys, and the toggle ring changing to be exactly the same as they are on the Intuos 4.
Nice.
Really nice feature about the new Cintiq is that the slide buttons are put behind the screen so that you can rest your thumb on the bevel at the side and slide the zoom in, zoom out, increase brush size in the most natural, comfortable way.
Awesome.
Really impressive. And the number of brushes that you can use with the Intuos 4 is the same for the new Cintiq, whereas with the interactive pen displays, it doesn't need or have that same range because it's a much, much simpler presentation.
Okay. But if you were using it with, say, Photoshop, you could go and load any brush in Photoshop, couldn't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. Cool. So Leo, Linda tells me that you're the photography nut.
Getting that, yeah.
So what do you love about using a tablet, you know, over using a mouse when it comes to photo retouching?
Well, first of all, when you're doing photo retouching, you have the ability to vary the different dynamics of Photoshop. Things like opacity, the size of the brush, the color dynamic range, even like the angle and so on, by yep. just using one of those dynamics that are built onto the Intuos. So things like pressing harder to vary the opacity, or pressing harder to vary the brush, or pressing harder to vary the color changes, or the spread of your the little activations. So when using Photoshop and just cutting out an area, it's quite difficult to just select and using a mouse.
Yes.
People use this magnetic lasso and they think that that's actually designed to make it easier, but in the first place, it's actually designed to be used with a tablet because you can select a lot more accurately the outlines of, say, a face or a person, etc. When you actually cut out the pictures and put it in a different background, you can just phase out the background to the foreground by erasing them using pressure sensitive and varying with opacity. And as you press harder, you get a blurred background rather than just a very defined outline as well. You know how when you do feathering, like
yep.
three pixel feathering, that's automatic. But with the brush, you can just fine tune. Certain areas has lighter feathering then harder feathering on the others as well.
Oh, right? So that would work for painting masks as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Painting masks, you can use it for smudging, people use it for spot filling, people using it for all those different things, like dodge and burn.
Yeah.
Really.
Oh, man. See, I'm going to have to go and experiment with that now.
You know how you... Yeah, it's true. You know, in your adjustment levels, automatic, on building on the essential brush tools, each on all of those individual panels, like your brightness, exposure, vibrance, and all that.
Yep.
You can just pick up a brush. Now you have to pick up the brush that blurs out as you press harder. It's probably usually default to like the 34 points, but then you can adjust the size and so on. But as you use any of this adjustment panel, you can just use the brush to make a mask over it. So, you know, say you want brightness on one of this adjustment panel, just pick up the brush, just brush it lightly onto that particular adjustment, and then say you do a different type of adjustment as well on, say, the exposure, and you can just pick up the brush again and do that.
Mm. Interesting. Oh, I'm definitely going to have to look into that because this is what I mean. Like, I feel like I've only just scratched the surface with mine, but I feel like, you know, there's all this other functionality that I've yet to explore. But it really does change the way that you work. I've just
found that. And not only that, but on the level of, say, if you have other photographers that are relying more and more into Lightroom, with the Lightroom 2, there's spot healing tool, which is just brilliant, and there's also built-in brush in there as well. And with newer release of Lightroom and Lightroom 3s, there'll be more and more of those Wacom functionality built in onto their tools as well.
Yeah, I've been playing with it in Lightroom as well, and it's just as beautiful to use in Lightroom as it is in Photoshop.
It is.
What we've been seeing is that Adobe are increasingly incorporating the Wacom codes into their applications. So Illustrator now has a blob brush, which is completely dependent on the tablet to work correctly.
Right.
Flash has been pressure sensitive for years, but people haven't been aware of it. And if you're drawing, having pressure sensitivity is going to make the images look so much more normal and natural than having to work with a tool that has a specified, you know, point value that's consistent no matter how hard or how lightly you press on the mouse. So it makes a huge difference to the end result of what you can produce.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, the other area as well that people are starting to get more and more into is when photographers trying to make a different type, you know, trying to make an art out of the photos, like art painting.
Yes.
Programs like Corel Painter is just amazing. You know, amazing, amazing, amazing.
Right. So what are they doing there? They're painting brush strokes over an existing photo. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay. Every year, Wacom and Adobe are partners in supporting the Connected Learning Awards with New South Wales DET. And one of the categories is digital art. And invariably, they're using Adobe, the senior students. And last year, they were allowed to use photography as well. And the descriptions of what they had done were in-depth of how they used Photoshop and the different effects on the tablets to create a beautiful artwork, you know, that they felt really strongly about at the end of it. So we're seeing this type of approach becoming more and more a given amongst the younger demographics.
Right.
If we go to somewhere like Supernova, where the demographic is somewhere between a 10-year-old and a 24-year-old, many, many thousands of them, their familiarity with working with tablets is just a given. We're constantly surprised at the difference in the sort of audiences that we speak to as to whether or not they're aware of tablets and the value of tablets. And it seems to me that the younger ones are coming up expecting to have this type of intuitive interface with their computers that, you know, we didn't even think of when we were at their age.
No, exactly. It's great that that technology is progressing along these lines, that, you know, people are expecting, you know, less technological barriers to using technology, as it were.
Yeah, it's just such a given with the younger ones. I'm not a creative, I'm the sales manager, so I tend to be more figure-driven. But I've got so used to using my Bamboo now, I couldn't go back to using a mouse. The advantages of navigating with a pen over a mouse are huge. You know, people are sitting at computers now for longer and longer periods of time, and using a mouse can create a real problem with RSI.
Yep.
And repetitive strain injuries, and even if it doesn't get to that point, certainly, you know yourself, if you've been working for a long time at your computer, you can feel it in your shoulder and your elbow and wrist. And with a pen, there's 78% less strain in your tendons. So
wow.
you're not likely to have that same fatigue from that you do have if you're working with a mouse for such long periods of time. And with something like Photoshop, working with a mouse where you've got to actually click and hold the mouse button down for some period of time to use that brush, you can really feel that strain.
Yep, absolutely. I can speak from experience on that one.
Yeah, I thought you might.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I was thinking about before we started recording was that, you know, you quite often will hear, you know, an objection from a potential customer would be, well, I'm not an artistic person, you know, I've never held a paintbrush. And I thought, well, really, if you've ever held a pencil and you know how to use a pencil, then you're pretty much qualified to use a tablet.
That's exactly right. We do a lot of home shows, and we will see preschool children come up and pick up the pen and just use it without thinking.
Yeah, because right.
They don't have pre-learned habits.
Yeah.
So they don't have to overcome any barriers that, you know, this isn't the way I work. Children are just instinctive at that age.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic to see, you know, what they can do without any instruction from us at all.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Very welcome.
Thank you.
Now, do you reckon we could maybe scrounge up a tablet that we could give away to a listener?
I think that would be possible.
Fantastic. All right. So we'll have to come up with some sort of way to give that away. I don't know what we're going to do, whether we'll get someone to, you know, answer a question or find something on the Wacom site or something like that. But we'll come up with the details and we will post it in the show notes on shuttersincpodcast.com. So go there, check out the what the details for the competition are, and you could pick up for yourself an Intuos 4 PTK 640 graphics tablet. Well, Linda and Leo, thank you once again. It's been great to have you.
Thank you very much.
So, Shelton, what did you think of that?
Very interesting. I'm not one who uses a tablet. I have tried in years past, but just couldn't get used to it. So a lot of things that they were saying were making me think, A, this is worth doing.
Right.
And B, I didn't realize that there were those benefits. But, you know, the point that they, you know, especially with the new Intuos, there are some serious benefits that are time saving and creative in terms of how it integrates with Lightroom and Photoshop, etc.
Right.
As we were saying, you know, before we started recording, it's just something that I'm going to have to force myself to get used to, because I'm such a mouse man.
Right.
And the kinds and a lot of the things that they were talking about in terms of actual processes within Photoshop and Lightroom, I don't necessarily do a heck of a lot of.
Right.
But then, I don't know, maybe I do more of it than I think, and, you know, using the pen will be worthwhile. I'm looking forward to giving it a try. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I wonder, do you think there's any possibility that the reason you don't do much brushwork in Photoshop or Lightroom is because it is not very pleasant to do with a mouse? Do you think that maybe, you know, given a more user-friendly interface, you know, i.e. a stylus, you might be inclined to do more, or not necessarily?
I wouldn't be at all surprised. I mean, if you think of mankind's history, we have been writing since, well, man first learned to communicate through, you know, putting something down on papyrus or stone.
We've used
sticks, we've used pencils, we've used pens, quills, we've used all sorts of long, thin, you know, cylindrical devices to do it.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the age of the computer comes along, and we've got this funny egg-shaped thing that we're working with. And it seems interesting to me that we've actually gone against what seems to have been an established and innate style of writing and drawing and sketching to this funny egg-shaped thing.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense to me. It seems innate in us that we should, you know, work with something, you know, like a pen. That seems to have been the established thing in human history. Why have we suddenly gone to this funny little egg-shaped thing with two clickers on it? It doesn't seem to make much sense to me. And yet, at the same time, I'm so used to the damn thing.
Yes. Yes.
So, as she was saying in the interview, which I thought interesting, there are school children and preschoolers picking up this stylus and just working away with it.
Yeah.
Which again supports my argument that it is innate in humans to work with something shaped like that.
Yep.
However, for me, I'm looking forward to receiving it. I'm looking forward to having to use 78% less of my muscles and tendons to get things done after hours in Lightroom and Photoshop.
Yeah.
That actually, I mean, that's a seriously valid point.
Definitely.
You know, and I'm looking forward to the benefits that come from it. What I'm not looking forward to is that day or so, or however long it's going to take, of unlearning a mouse and relearning a stylus. How long do you think?
Well, I find that I tend to use both, but I suspect that given enough time, I will probably use the stylus more and more. What I'm finding at the moment, having, you know, only spent, you know, maybe 8 to 10 hours with the thing so far, is that when it comes to accessing a menu within an application, I'm slower with the stylus than I am with a mouse. But I put that down to having been using a mouse for 15 years versus using a stylus for only, you know, 8 hours. But when it comes to you know, brush strokes in Photoshop and Lightroom, the stylus just eats the mouse for breakfast. It
right.
really does. It just feels so much more natural and more intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just think, you know, the longer I spend with it, the more natural it will become to use the stylus to access menus and, you know, and change system settings and whatnot, you know, right. things that we've traditionally done with a mouse.
But you were saying that you are happy to keep them both attached to your computer and alternate between them.
Definitely.
So it doesn't have to be a one or the other.
No. And I mean, if I wanted to be absolutely crazy, I could run every single app on my computer using the stylus. Like I could work in Adobe Audition, my mm-hmm. audio editing application, using the stylus if I really wanted to learn it and get used to that sort of functionality. But I'm so used to using a mouse and my external mixing desk, which acts as a, you know, an external control surface for Audition, mm-hmm. that, you know, that's a more natural approach for an audio engineer who's been doing it for as long as I have. So,
yeah.
you know, I probably won't get into the habit of using the stylus in Audition, but the point is that the functionality's there. I could if I wanted to.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to giving it a try and seeing if, at a creative level, which is what you intimated, you know, a minute ago, if at a creative level it makes a difference to my post-processing.
Well, I certainly feel like it has made a difference to me simply because of that, you know, that whole pressure sensitivity thing. You know, you can just, by applying more pressure to the stylus on the tablet, you can change, you know, the intensity of your brush strokes and things like that. And mm-hmm. even though I haven't delved into, you know, all of the things you can do with sensitivity, you know, with regards to the stylus on the tablet, certainly brush strokes I've been playing with in the last 24 hours. I know.
Right.
But yeah, it's just, yeah, very interesting.
Well, there's a technique that I probably will find helpful with, which I use for burnt out highlights in Photoshop.
Oh, okay.
And basically you get you get the paintbrush out. And you put it at a medium flow,
yep.
and a low opacity of say 15%, something like that.
Yep.
You grab the paintbrush and then you go over and you click on a color that you want. So, you know, let's say for instance there's an area of burnt out skin on the forehead.
Right.
So, you know, it might be a hot spot from flash or a studio light or something like that.
Sure.
What I do is I get the paintbrush, I click on a little bit of skin, you know, or color near it that actually has some texture.
Yep.
And then I lightly paint over that burnt out area so it retains its texture.
So you're using like the clone stamp tool to do that?
No, no, I'm just using the paintbrush.
Oh, so you're just taking the color.
I'm painting the skin color over whatever texture has remained in that burnt out area.
Right. So you're doing this on a second layer and having that layer mode set to a color blend mode?
No.
No?
No, I use a duplicate layer to protect the layer underneath.
Oh, okay.
But I'm literally just painting over the top of the skin.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I haven't used any blending or any modes of any kind in layers. I'm just literally painting with a low opacity over that burnt out area.
Funny, you know, it's funny that you should mention opacity because one of the things that I have noticed in the, you know, 8 hours or so that I've spent with this tablet is that I'm finding now that I'm doing a lot more work with lower opacities than I would ever have bothered with when I was using the mouse.
Right.
And the reason that I think I'm doing that is because when you're holding the stylus, you know what it's like when you sketch or when you doodle, mm-hmm. you know, you can do, you know, a dozen strokes in a couple of seconds, just little
yes.
light strokes.
And which you can't do with a mouse.
No, with a mouse, it just doesn't work, you know? And so, you know, I've always, you know, when I've done, you know, brush work with a mouse in the past, I've, like you, probably never gone below 10% opacity for the brush because you just feel like it's click, drag, click, drag, click, drag,
yes.
click, drag, you know, and, yes. and it's just too painful. But with a stylus, I find I'm quite often working at 2 and 3% opacity, but you're just sitting there just doing hundreds and hundreds of these little short strokes and it builds up so much more smoothly than it does with a mouse.
Yeah.
That's just been my experience anyway.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. You know, I mean, I don't get a lot of burnt out spots, but, you know, there are occasions where, you know, and I'm looking at a picture that we took of you at the workshop.
Right.
You model you.
Thank you.
And you know, you've got a bit of a burnt out spot on your forehead, which I don't mind in the case of a man so much. But
sure.
You know, when girls are wanting their skin to be perfectly smooth and lovely and whatnot,
yep.
And it's that, that shot where you're sort of looking over your right shoulder, looking down at the floor, and you know, yep. I've composed the way I normally do and given you no looking room in the shot.
I quite like that shot.
Oh, thank you. I think you look very handsome. I'm sure that Kath will want that for her Facebook, you know, on her Facebook or something, or on her desk or something, you know. You know, that I do hopefully not too much, because I don't want to get too many hotspots. But I just wanted to, I'm looking forward to seeing how that, you know, how that goes. That'll be interesting because, sure. like you say, you're able to paint. You know, like we've been doing for millennia,
yeah.
with sticks and bits of brush and all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to that. So I'll go down to the post office box, get mine out, plug it in, and see how it goes.
Well, hopefully it'll be there tomorrow, matey. I mailed it yesterday afternoon, so.
Well, you are the bearer of good gifts because, of course, you turn to the workshop. With you know, two autographed books from you know, a certain Joe McNally.
I did. That's
you
right.
You did. I'm really liking you.
Thank you, mate.
I'm really, really liking you.
I try.
Oh, thanks, buddy. You know, I appreciate it. So I've got two copies. I've got two. You know, I don't know, I'll have to give these books that I've got. You know, the ones that I actually went out and bought to some deserving friend of mine.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of them.
And speaking of giveaways, we have a giveaway to announce at the end of the podcast.
We do have a giveaway to announce at the end of the podcast. But before we get to that, there's one thing that, and I have foolishly started reading both of Joe's books simultaneously. Instead of just reading Hot Shoe Diaries. Oh, sorry. No, what was first?
The Moment It Clicks.
Moment It Clicks. Instead of just reading that first and then starting Hot Shoe Diaries, I've actually got them both on the go. So I don't remember at the intro to which book it was, but there was this one comment that I am certain is going to stick with me for the rest of my photographic career.
Yeah.
And he said that one of his early editors said to him, if you want to imbue a subject with some mystery,
mm-hmm.
don't light all of it.
Yep, I read that too. It's an old, yeah.
And I just thought, man, that is just a gem right there in just one sentence.
Yes.
You know, that, you know, to keep some mystery, just don't light the whole damn thing. You know, leave a bit of shadow. And I thought, wow, that's just awesome advice.
Yeah, very true.
And I don't know why, but it just really resonated with me. And I, like I said, I doubt I will ever forget that information.
The thing I've learned about running workshops over these last couple of years or so is that the articulation of what we do, you know, putting it into words and presenting it out there is the greatest teacher you could possibly have for yourself.
Yeah, right.
And you don't understand what it is you're doing sometimes that's so simple in principle that it bears heavily on almost every aspect of your photography. And then one day you articulate it. And I look, that moment, I suppose, came for me years ago when we first started this podcast, when out of a sudden I coined a phrase called find the light and put them in it.
Yeah.
Now, that was, if I remember it correctly, it was just something that came out of my mouth.
Right.
And it's been a catch cry on this podcast, a catch cry at 5 Minute Photographer, and a catch cry at so many of my workshops that it has actually taught me what I do, and I didn't even know I did it until I articulated it.
Wow. So that wasn't a premeditated phrase?
Not really. Not that I know. It was because we were in the throes of this conversation. And I was saying, look, you just find the light and you put them in it.
Yeah.
Now, probably someone's going to go through the back catalog and find episode 1 or 2 or something like that and find that a moment of epiphany that, you know, that you know, manifested itself here on Shutter Zinc. But no, I don't remember that being a premeditated comment. It was just find the light and put them in it. And I learn every time I do a workshop, and it even happened on Saturday night when you were there. That there's something by saying something, by teaching something, by seeing it put into a certain small phrase, you learn so much from it. And that comment that Joe makes in the book, and I think it's Hot Shoe Diaries, that comment that he makes is so true, that if you, you know, don't light everything. Just, yeah, don't. And that's a common mistake that photographers make. They light everything.
Right.
And, you know, if you don't have shadow for one thing, then you're missing out on the third dimension, you know, the three dimensionality of your picture. And also you're giving, it's, you're just showing them everything. There's nothing for them to think about, look for in the image.
Yeah.
And, absolutely, absolutely right. And that's part of why I think the whole strobist phenomenon has taken over. It's one of the reasons, because it gives us an opportunity in broad daylight or in late afternoon light or whatever, in whatever conditions, to actually not light something or remove the light from it. And that's what we were doing, well, especially after we finished the studio session in the Advanced Flash Photography Workshop. It's part of what we were doing in at dusk around the Abbotsford Convent the other night.
Right.
You know, and remember when we, and this is something I wanted to talk to you about, because you had a couple of things that you you said you enjoyed about the workshop, but there was one thing that really, really hit home with me. You may remember after the studio lighting session where we did, you know, clamshell and, you know, butterfly and things with the beautiful Sophie Vandenacker.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible name, but boy, she has a face, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah, oh. Absolutely. Absolutely wow. Gorgeous. I will be honest, you know, the first series of photos I saw of Soph were the first emerging nymph shoot shots. And I thought, oh, yeah, she's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I saw the video that David Oakley put together from that shoot. There was stuff shot with her on the beach before the makeup was done. And it was only when I saw her animated in video that I went, holy crap, yeah, she is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. She has one of the most geometrically beautiful,
very, very symmetrical face, And of course, then to meet her on Saturday, I was like, oh, yeah, hello.
Yeah, she has quite the personality, doesn't she?
She's lovely.
Yeah, she really is. And so when we finished that session with her, and then, you know, she had to leave, and then we worked with someone so completely different in appearance, and that was Stephanie.
Yeah.
You know, Stephanie's certainly attractive, but, you know, she was very different in looks to Soph.
Yep.
But the thing that interested me was that my good friend Scott, whom you met the other night, was at the workshop. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And when we finished with Soph, we dismantled that studio and we went into the next room, which was fairly beautifully lit by lots of windows.
Yep.
And I set one flash up on a stand with a Honnel quarter grid.
Yep.
I had Stephanie just sitting against the wall and there was plenty of light. You could have actually used and done a window light with an 85 or 51.8 in there.
You could have.
But what we decided to do was create a shaft of light using the
gridded flash.
The Vivitar 285 flash and the Honnel quarter grid. I took the photograph and at, I think it was about f8 at 250th, which in a room meant that nothing registered except for the light coming from the flash. And Scott, my good friend, was standing there as I was doing the test shot waiting for everybody else to come in. And he looked at that shot and he just said, oh, that's awesome. And it was the simplest thing. And he said, if I'm taking anything home from this workshop, it's what you just did just then. And I asked him why, and he said, well, it's so simple, A, to set up, and you can make a shaft of light appear anywhere you want.
Yep.
And if you align what Scott was saying with what Joe says in the opening of his book, that's exactly those two things to, you know, what Scott experienced there and then.
Right.
With just, you know, the shaft of light as a girl sitting against a wall, and Joe saying, don't light everything, because we removed all of the light.
Well, we certainly removed all of the ambient light, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we removed it all and created, you know, so much darkness for her to sit in that we did exactly the thing that impressed Scott.
Yeah.
He wants to create shafts of light when he photographs weddings, when he photographs portraits. And I thought, yeah, right at this moment, the simplicity of this and what you were saying about not lighting everything is absolutely true. And it's funny, we did so many complex things on that workshop, and yet it was the simplicity of that that really hit home. He was just amazed with the fact that you put this honeycombed bit of plastic over a flash expose for the flash, making sure that you remove all the ambient by using a fast enough shutter speed, and you create something that as we've said many times before, doesn't exist in real life.
Yeah.
So it was the simplicity of it that really moved him. And like I said, flies in perfect unison with what Joe says in the opening of that book.
Yeah.
How did you go with the workshop? Anything particular that you're taking home?
Look, as I said to you before we started...
Otherwise, you know,
pretty crap. As I said to you before we started recording, even though I've had the Honnel gear for a couple of months, I've just not made it a priority to get out the grids and the, you know, the speed snoot and play with those things. And so it was good to finally get to play with those. And towards the end of the night, the last setup we were doing where you were doing the blue light wire thingy, which I just decided, I wasn't really interested in that one. So I went off and I was playing with some of my own, you know, my own Honnel gear and one of my flashlights, and there was just a wall of one of the buildings in the convent with just a double doorway and a couple of steps. And what I did was I set my flash up in front of that, and I was just taking some test shots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, started out with just, you know, the bare flash with no light modifier on it whatsoever. And then I put one of the grids on there, and then I tried it with the speed snoot, you know, both wrapped tight and, you know, sort of only half wrapped around. And it really amazed me just how much those light modifiers can really control the spread of the light from your flash. A heck of a lot more than I, you know, had given them credit for in my mind before I'd actually used them. I'd sort of thought, oh, yeah, they might, you know, tame the spill by X amount, but I didn't realize that they would be just as effective as they are. They really can tighten the spread of the light, you know, to an unbelievably precise, you know, spread, you know. And so,
much control.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, that was a big revelation. Mm. And I also, you know, as much as I thought I understood things like, you know, clamshell and butterfly lighting setups, it was good to actually go through them in the studio with you, explaining the setup and why certain placement and all that sort of thing. So that was, you know, I mean, those were the sorts of things that, you know, if you'd left me to my own devices with, you know, a couple of umbrellas and a couple of stands, I might have eventually got the look right, but it would have been a lot of trial and error. So to have that stuff explained was certainly, you know, priceless. So, yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, well, I'm glad.
And so now I've got a severe case of gear acquisition syndrome.
I'm a little sad that the thing that you took away most from the workshop was the little test session you did up against the door by yourself. You know, I'll have to deal with that. Apart from that, I hope that you enjoyed your afternoon.
Oh, mate, I had a great time. You know, I actually enjoyed being the model for 5 minutes. That was it was kind of good.
Yeah, Mr. Bruce Williams, the model. You know, and you look good, mate. You look good. You photograph well.
Thank you.
And the one thing actually, where as I mentioned it, just as an aside, and I imagine, you know, you already know this, being a photographer and having been on this podcast for a few years now. Sophie, of course, is fairly new to modeling, and I think she could do really, really well.
Right.
She's got a fair bit to learn, but one of the things that we were talking about with her, and I'll expand upon this perhaps at another podcast a little bit more, was the, you know, her knowledge, her understanding of where the light is coming from and keeping her face in that direction to, you know, a certain angle, etc.
Right.
It's funny, just before we were recording, I was flicking, you know, through the Foxtel channels, finding something to, you know, watch for a few seconds while I had a glass of water. And Tyra Banks comes on for America's Next Top Model.
Oh, okay.
And she's saying to the model, you know, as they're going through the photographs, remember, the light is your friend. You need to know where the light is coming from.
Yeah.
And I thought, yes, what a great lesson for a model, something that I've taught all my, you know, models who've come to workshops. Look, ask the photographer where the main light is, ask him where the fill light is, ask him, you know, where, have a look where he is, so that you find a balance between the main light and, you know, and the photographer. And I was thinking, you know, models have to learn this, but when photographers are posing models, do they know that? You know, so many times at the shops, we have to remind our customers, because there might be 10 people and they're photographing from over here or over there, and they're getting the model to turn to them. But the moment they do, the beautiful light that we've posed her for is gone. Right? And it's just because they'd prefer to be over there and photograph across the group from that angle because it's convenient. They're not actually, you know, posing the model for the light. Let's talk about that a little bit more in a future podcast, because I think there's a lot of room there for both models, but especially photographers, to learn from.
Okay.
So we'll keep that in mind, and if we'll put that out there for the next, you know, week or so, so that people can say, oh, yes, Shelton, that's something I'd like to learn about. So send us an email, but you don't have to do it like, of course, you know, you don't have to do it like Marvin the Martian. You know, that voice doesn't come across in an email.
No, probably not.
There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom. but you know, by all means, let's talk about that in future workshops. But we should perhaps consider how we're going to give away this. What have we got, Bruce?
It is an Intuos 4 graphics tablet from Wacom. Mm-hmm. The PTK 640, for those who really want to go and have a look and see which model it is. It's the second one up from the bottom out of the four. And,
right.
And it's the same size that you and I have got. So the tablet itself is a little bit larger than a foolscap sheet of paper.
Right,
and,
wow.
And your tablet area is, I would say, it's bigger than 6 inches by 4 inches. It's bigger than that. It's probably close to an 8x10 area for writing on, drawing on.
Seriously cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm.
And it's got, you know, it's got 8 buttons down the side of it, as well as the little circular control wheel, and you've got your USB port underneath it. So, yeah, it's great.
Fantastic.
So we have one of those to give away to one lucky listener. I have no idea how we're going to do this.
Well, either we stop the recording now, we talk about how we're going to do this, or between now and the next podcast, we get everyone to salivate just a little over the prospect of winning it while we come up with some really clever idea.
Okay, let's leave it for a week.
Ooh, we're bad.
Right now, everyone's tearing their hair out. I'm going, you bastard!
Well, maybe we'll get some emails during the course of, the next few days saying, well, I've got a really good idea on how, you know. Yeah. And it has to be a competition based on some level of skill. We can't just sort of give a lucky number.
No, that's right. So if anyone has an idea that, you know, for something that we could use as a criterion for giving away this tablet, send us some ideas.
Fantastic.
We can we can then announce it in the following podcast. And and one lucky person will pick up this this great graphics tablet.
Fantastic. And of course, something else we'll be announcing soon too is a certain line of merchandise. Shall we talk about that?
Not yet.
Ooh.
I'm still kicking that around.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Am I a little bit preemptive, am I?
Yeah, a little bit, but that's okay.
Well, you can edit it out.
No, that's fine. We've given them a tease now. So.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's just do that. Just teasers.
But one thing that I would like to mention that's come out today, and like I said, this is Tuesday night as we're recording this, so this will be 5-day-old information by the time the listeners hear this, and you'll probably already know. But if you didn't, Lightroom version 3 beta number 2 has been released today. It's about 150 meg download for the Windows version. I didn't see how big the Mac download version was, but it's probably somewhere about the same size. So if you are interested, definitely go and check it out. One of the things that they seem to be promoting the most with this second beta is that it now has the capacity to allow tethered shooting.
Yes.
So, yeah, I haven't looked to see if there were any other new features introduced in beta number 2. I've downloaded it and I've run it, and it all looked pretty much the same as the first beta. But, yeah, if you haven't got it...
For asking for a stupid question, how long can you play with beta number 2 for before it expires?
Well, presumably until a month after the product actually ships.
Right.
That's the normal cycle time for their betas, as far as I know. They run for about a month after the actual product ships. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, they let all of the betas, like even if there were, say, 3 betas released prior to the final version, they'd let all 3 of those betas run to the same, you know, kill date, which would be, you know, a month after whenever the final product shipped. So obviously they'd somehow have a way of killing it off, you know, because obviously they don't know when the release date's going to be.
No, so, but it'll be a Big Brother thing, you know.
Oh, it'll be huge when it goes, yeah, for sure.
No, but I mean, you know, the Big Brother, they'll have, you know, they'll have viruses coming up our wires and cameras, satellites and stuff shutting down our computers.
Something like that, yeah.
Orwellian masterpiece of sleuthdom. Shut everybody's beta versions down.
Yeah, something like that. So
until clever, geeky, pimply computer nerd comes up with a way of telling us all, you know, which they do. Apparently, they have a tendency to do.
Do they?
Well, I'll have to have a look at that. I'll download that little, you know.
One thing I am looking forward to trying out, I noticed when I installed it this evening and I ran it for the first time, it automatically detected my existing Lightroom 3 Beta 1 catalog, and it said this catalog needs to be updated to Lightroom 3 Beta 2 standards before you can use it. And so I said, oh, okay, go ahead and upgrade it. So what I'm looking forward to now is to going and seeing whether or not it will allow me to import my Lightroom 2 catalog, because I know in beta number 1, you couldn't open a Lightroom 2 catalog. It would not convert the catalog to to Lightroom 3 standard. So it'll be interesting to see whether this second beta actually has that functionality or whether it's only capable of importing a Lightroom 3 beta 1 catalog.
Right.
So anyway, if that makes sense.
Yep, absolutely. Sure does.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they obviously saw that as a problem and, you know, fixed it in the next beta.
Hmm. You know, well, somebody did say to me that it may have been a very deliberate move that the first beta wouldn't open a Lightroom 2 catalog because they don't want people, you know, committing their entire workflow to a product that's still in beta and capable of still having errors.
Yeah.
And so that may have been a very deliberate move on Adobe's part. I don't know. I'm not speaking from any position of authority. I'm just merely reciting what someone else said to me. So it is possible that that's the case, that it was a deliberate strategy, in which case, you know, this beta may not import Lightroom 2 catalogs either, but we'll see.
Right. Well, see how we go.
Have you been using Lightroom 3 beta 1?
No, still, I haven't downloaded the betas, so I'll have to have a bit of a play. I've only been in Lightroom 2.
Oh, okay.
So, and look, I keep my Lightroom process very, very simple.
Right.
Personally, I use my Lightroom to do very simple batching.
Right.
I must admit, you know, to in terms of white balance, contrast, you know, vignetting in some cases, conversions to black and white, those kinds of things.
Yep.
But I am not a fan of a lot of the, I'll put the word creative in inverted commas, tools or processes that photographers are using in Lightroom. I don't know. There's a lot of looks that are coming out of Lightroom that are not
natural.
I just think they're missing something.
Right.
What I do in a wedding is I will batch convert a whole bunch of stuff, you know, from color to black and white to get my black point or, you know, white balance or whatever it is that needs to be done over these next 30 or 40 images.
Yep.
And then I'll move on through, you know, sections through my wedding, right?
Yep.
Then, you know, I will pick out the images that I seriously want to, you know, work more creatively, and they may not be that many, but there'll be some. And then I will do those in Photoshop. But I haven't really liked a lot of the, I don't know, creative processes in Lightroom as much as Photoshop. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, I need to get with, but they seem, a lot of these techniques seem to, they have an appearance of things that look very dated very quickly.
Right.
And in fact, and I just said, dated so quickly that I've looked at them and gone, no, I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
But in a year or two from now, you know, will that be the case? I'm looking at images right now. Joe McNally has just emailed us all and said that he's just updated his blog.
Right.
So while I've been talking to you, I've been looking at Joe McNally's latest photographs on his blog, and it's something called Making Window Light.
Okay.
And he's got photographs of this really cool cowboy dude with a beard, and it's just window light portraits. However, he's created the window lights using, Nikon strobes through a scrim that's, you know, firmly planted up against the window of this old jail cell.
Right.
Now, these photographs, I don't think there's any Lightroom to them at all. And if so, it would be extremely basic, maybe a bit of vignetting, maybe a little bit of, you know, black point, white point, saturation.
Yep.
I don't know. But they look like photographs.
Right.
He's worked the image in the camera so well that these images, they're as timeless as anything you'd see out of a National Geographic over the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
Because they haven't had any effects applied to them. They've just been really brilliantly executed but simple photographs.
Right.
And I'm so that's why for me Lightroom has been a tool that I've been satisfied with in its most basic form, because I've needed it for its most basic processes.
Right.
You know, since version 1 came out, I've really not moved on from there in terms of how I've used Lightroom.
Fair enough.
The only thing is, of course, I needed to upgrade so I could use the later NEF files in the D700.
Right.
But apart from that, there's not a heck of a lot that I use in terms of Lightroom that I, you know, don't use in Photoshop. A, I like to get the image as right as I can in camera. B, I will then just simply batch process what I need. And, you know, C, then I will take that handful of images that I had a pre-vision for and work them in Photoshop. Now, that's my process, because I simply haven't liked a lot of the things that have come out of Lightroom. But I know there are a lot of photographers who live and swear by Lightroom and haven't looked at Photoshop in, you know, since the inception of Lightroom.
Yeah, well, I must admit, I don't go into Photoshop as much as I used to.
Yeah.
Because I find that for the basic things, as you said, you know, like black point, white balance,
yep.
You know, a bit of contrast, you know, that sort of stuff you can do really nicely in Lightroom and not have to worry about creating a new, you know, a PSD file, which is just another file on your system,
yep.
You know, that needs to be backed up and kept track of and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I love being able to just import the raw files into my Lightroom catalog, do my, you know, keyword tagging, and then, you know, just process the image the way I want it, and I can then export it in any shape or form as I need it. You know, if I want a small one to email, or I want a big one from a website, or
upload to Facebook.
Or I want a bigger one to print or whatever, you know. I do like that. So anyway, what I'm really looking forward to, and I'm sure, and again, I'm not speaking from any position of authority because I don't know, but I would just imagine that somewhere down the track this will come, and that'll be when they introduce adjustment layers into Lightroom.
Ooh.
Because then I don't think you'll need Photoshop.
No, maybe not. Interesting.
And I'm sure it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. That is an interesting thought. I don't know that they're going to want to invalidate Photoshop completely. They may actually avoid integrating that functionality into Lightroom so as to keep selling Photoshop.
Possible.
They might be cutting their nose off to spite their face.
Possible.
You know, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Anyway, purely speculative.
Till we find out the facts.
That's it. All right, mate. Well, good to talk to you again.
You too. And thanks for coming down from Sydney for our workshop. It was a pleasure to see you and have you there, mate. It really was.
I had a great time.
I'm glad.
It's good to be there.
I'm glad. We'll do it again.
Definitely. Well, I'll certainly be down for PMA.
Yep.
So, is that June or July?
PMA is June 3 to 6.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's only about, 8 weeks away.
Yeah. Yeah. Not. Ooh, yeah.
Wow.
Mention it. Yeah. 8 weeks.
Cool. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
You too, mate.
And again, if you have any ideas on what we can do for a skills-based competition to give away this Intuos 4 tablet from Wacom, please drop us an email, studio@audiotu.com.
That's because we're too dumb to come up with anything. We'll call it the Bruce and Shelton, we're too dumb to come up with anything competition.
That's it. All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
You too, mate. See ya.
See ya.
This has been another AudioToYou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@AudioToYou.com.